This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a sixth win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Chuck McGee.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it is all presented by Fasig Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you along for the ride for the next hour on Sirius 216, XM 204, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and available anywhere that you get your podcasts each and every week. Well, my guest on today's show joined me on Trainer Talk in March of 2019. At that time, the native of Detroit, Michigan, who began her training career in 1981, had saddled 2,062 winners. Less than 4 years later, her win total now stands at 2,386. And as of this moment, which occurred at 2:36 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, March 12th, she now has the title of the number one winningest female trainer in North American thoroughbred racing history.
They come toward the top of the stretch. More drama cuts the corner to go to a narrow advantage. My Eagle soars down the far outside. Here comes Awesome Prince starting to stoke the fires. Discreet Devil in between horses. They have a final furlong left to go. Here comes Awesome Prince up on the outside. My Eagle soars still holding on just in front. It's My Eagle soars. Awesome Prince, Discreet Devil between them and down on the inside. More drama. My Eagle soars. Awesome Prince. My Eagle soars still just in front. My Eagle soars. Awesome Prince. My Eagle soars. A little bit of history there as Kathleen O'Connell becomes the all-time winningest female trainer in North America. My Eagle soars, wins it.
That was Jason Beam with the call of that historic moment, and it is my distinct pleasure to now welcome trainer Kathleen O'Connell to this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kathleen, congratulations, and I really do appreciate the time.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, I'm sure you've watched that race. At least I will assume that you've watched that race a few times since it's taken place. But put me there with you. What was it like as you were watching My Eagle soars come down the stretch?
Well, you root and cheer for all of them. And we've been rooting and cheering especially hard, obviously, the last week. So it means a lot. And it means a lot because it's an emotional ride over the years. And all the people that supported me as far as workers, owners, breeders, and to do it with a Stonehenge horse was especially special because I worked for the Campbells for over 30 years. And, of course, Mr. Campbell passed away, and that was one of the last horses he named.
Well, I was going to bring that up to you, and you led me right into it. That relationship is so special for you, and you just alluded to the reason why. It's fitting that My Eagle soars would be the one to go ahead and put you ahead of Kim Hammond.
Exactly. Like I say, it was going to be a great moment. It is a great moment, but it was a special one.
When you hear those words, number one winningest female trainer in North American thoroughbred racing history, what goes through your mind?
Well, it really hasn't sunk in yet, to be honest with you. Because, you know, we're just an everyday type operation. We've had a few high-powered horses over the years, which I'm very grateful for, but we're more of a blue-collar group. So, it was work as usual the next day, so to speak.
Yeah, you're right back at it. As a matter of fact, when you and I were trying to coordinate a time to get together for this show and record the program here, which is being pre-recorded, you and I were trying to coordinate, and you said, well, let's see. There's entries that day. There's entries, and entries don't close until this time. So the first thing that went through my mind was, does Kathleen O'Connell ever get a day off?
Well, we take time off, but it's hard to get a whole day off. You know, it's just like people that have children. Do you ever take a whole day off? No, I'm sure you don't. And even when you get babysitters or so on, you know, you're still calling to check in, and it's pretty much the life of a horse trainer.
I said that I kind of, you know, they say never assume, but I assume that you had watched the race a couple of times since My Eagle Soars gave you that record. Have you watched it very much?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's, you watch all races, you know, win, lose, or try and figure out better or where the horse is going to run back next time. But like I say, it's because so much happened in such a short space of time, you know, you really don't get to digest it, especially that one.
How many text messages or phone calls and congratulatory handshakes, hugs, whatever it might be, did you get after the race?
Oh, a lot. Too many to even acknowledge. I mean, it was just a flow of people, and I was very happy.
I know jockey Antonio Gallardo, who was aboard, was extremely happy too. He had a quote after the race where he said that he was talking to his wife, and he said he really wanted it to be him that was the one to be aboard for that record-breaking performance, and lo and behold, it was. He referred to you as being like his mom, so he was pretty excited.
Well, he's been, you know, a major force in my operation, too. You know, we ride all riders, and that one rider is going to fit every horse. But I have two or three standbys or, you know, the regular ones, and he's definitely been one of the regular riders. And actually, he wasn't even coming to Tampa Bay Downs. I actually talked him into coming to Tampa Bay Downs the first year he came. And nobody knew him, and nobody knew his agent. And I supported him, but, I mean, it's not like I ride just one rider. And he finished fifth in the standings. And when Tampa came, it came time to discuss Tampa, he goes, well, I don't know if I should go back or not. And I go, Antonio, I says, are you kidding me? You didn't know anybody, your agent didn't know anybody, and you finished fifth. Do you know how huge that is at Tampa? And he came back the next year, and he was leading rider for several years in a row. And, you know, it was just a wonderful start. It was before he had his children, and him and Polly got married. So, like I say, we have a long association.
You wouldn't have fought so hard to get him to come to Florida if you didn't feel as if he was a stand-up person and you didn't believe in him as a rider. So what attributes does Antonio Gallardo possess as a person and as a jockey that made you so adamant that you wanted him there, Kathleen?
Well, he's very reliable. He's got a good feedback. He's got good work ethics. You know, when you need him to work a horse or whatever, he's got a very good opinion, and he's very helpful. You know, with the horses, it's a group effort. You know, you got to pretty good idea of how they are in the morning, but they're still a little different in the afternoon. So everybody's feedback is very, very important in putting it all together.
Well, and he's certainly proven your faith in him to be right, because he has done a tremendous job. And I know that that relationship is very special, as you just talked about. After the race, you were quoted as saying that you really were thinking about everything and nothing. And you talked about the journey. It wasn't the destination, but it was about the journey of getting there. So how much time have you spent, Kathleen, reflecting on your journey in racing?
Well, I mean, I started on the racetrack in Detroit in 1970. So that's a lot of years. So it's not just one moment. It's everything leading up to it. And it's all the ins and outs that, you know, you build on and makes you a better person and a better horseman and more experienced and everything that goes with it.
Well, we have a segment that ends our Equine Forum show every Saturday morning. The segment is called I Ask, They Answer. And I'm joined by Dale Romans and by Tim Wilkin, longtime turf writer for the Albany Times Union. And Dale, at the end of the program, got to his parting shot, which is what we call it at the end of the show. And this is what Dale had to say with his parting shot on Saturday morning, even before you got that record.
Last Wednesday was International Women's Day, and I want to tip my hat to the women of racing. We got Kathleen O'Connell only two away from passing Kim Hammond as the all-time leading female trainer. And they're both ahead of me in number of wins. But I want to say, tip my hat to all the ladies of racing. It's a man-dominated game. They have to work harder. They have to prove themselves more. And there's no two better representatives to the trainer industry then Kim Hammond and Kathleen O'Connell. I tip my hat to both. They've won over 2,000 races apiece.
Well, Kathleen, when you hear Dale talk like that in glowing terms about you and about Kim, what comes to mind? What were you thinking as you were listening to that?
It's, some people are very stand-up in the industry, and he always has been. And, you know, he's just always been a good person. The few times that I ran in Kentucky, you know, he always would stop by and say, if you need anything, call. You've got my number. You know, it's people like that that when you're shipping places or, you know, you're going to the big races and you're not usually at the big races, that it's a very big help.
He talked about how women in the game, being a male-dominated sport, and there's no doubt it is, but women in the game have to work even harder to have the success that they've had. And I reflected back to the first time you joined me on Trainer Talk 4 years ago, and you told the story about getting your first license. And on it, it didn't say pony girl. It said pony boy at that point.
That's correct. But, I mean, when I came around, there weren't – Paula Bacon was just starting to ride. You know, the men didn't want to ride with them at Hialeah. And like I say, there was no box to check for pony boy or pony girl or exercise girl. That category didn't even exist. So, you know, I think it's tough in any business, but it's very, very tough in the horse business. But I think, you know, women have come a long way. And I just think in any business, if you give the 110%, if you put your nose to the grindstone, that you can succeed. The only thing that's going to stop you is you.
Yeah, and you've had to do that throughout your entire career. Persistence has always been something that you've prided yourself in. So talk a little bit about that. What's been the key to all of this success?
I just think the perseverance, you persevere on. There's, you know, the great times and you're at the big races. There's the times when it just doesn't seem to flow. Maybe the races that you need don't go. You know, the horses fall a half a length short or a length short. They run good, but just not that extra good enough. You know, as they say, there's only one winner, you know. And sometimes it does get discouraging. You're second. But you can always say you were the first loser. See, there's a good side to everything.
It's all how you look at it, right?
Exactly. And you just have, you know, focus on the things that you can do to change things and move on when you can't do anything about it.
Your first winner came in 1981. Kim's Lucky Spot came at Detroit Racecourse. At that time, there's no way on earth you could have been thinking, at some point, I'm going to be the all-time leading female trainer in the sport of thoroughbred racing.
No, I was just happy that I had one breeder, which I'm sure he's passed away by now, that gave me the shot to train a horse because I was just galloping horses. And I feel like I got a good foundation by galloping horses, and I galloped for a lot of good trainers, and I galloped with a lot of people that became eventually good trainers. So it's just a combination of learning. There's never a day that goes by that you can't learn something on the racetrack, from a horse, from somebody, from a hot walker to another person in the paddock. There is always something to learn. And the best thing is to be like a sponge and absorb it all. And then you pick the good from the bad and what works and go from there.
Who are some of the people, Kathleen, that have had the biggest influence on you in your career? Some of the people you've learned the most from over the years?
Well, I mean, I work for so many people. I would surely hate to leave anybody out. But, I mean, Jack Vanberg was in Detroit for years. I galloped horses for a gentleman named W.R. Harp, who's passed away. But he was a hard boot from Kentucky, and he was a very, very good horseman. There was Henry Ramirez, Sturgis Ducoin, who still trains in the fairgrounds. And like I say, I just feel like I was lucky because I galloped horses for these people at different times. I might have helped run the shed. I got to see different people's perspectives of doing things and just learning a little bit from everybody.
Do you think that helps you now, even all these years later, all that experience that you've been able to garner over the years and the different philosophies that you've been able to take in, does that help you become an even better trainer today?
Oh, I think everything helps. Everything helps.
What does the name Sherman Armstrong mean to you?
Sherman Armstrong means a very, very lot. When I first came to the racetrack, of course, I just walked hots, and then they found out I could ride. Then I got a pony license, and Sherman Armstrong had come up to help with the Sugar Hill horses. And in at that point in time, Detroit was getting ready to end, and he knew I broke show horses. And I said, well, I've never rode a thoroughbred. But, you know, I rode the pony, took horses to the gate for him, walked hats, helped him around the barn. And he goes, well, he goes, if you want a job breaking two-year-olds and, you know, there's an opportunity in Ocala, that'd be a place to stay. You know, it was like $330 a month and a place to live, which, you know, I'm thinking this is the greatest thing. I ride horses, I do what I want, and I get paid for it. I mean, you know. And I think of how well it worked out, because at the time he had just came up to help Bill Cole, a gentleman that was training for Sugar Hill Farms, and he was going back to the farm. But I mean, I look at now, they were very, very good people, very stand-up people. He actually had a daughter that was just a couple years younger than me. And, you know, they treated me more like family than a farm worker. And of course, they loved me to death, because, I mean, I didn't care. I rode horses all day. I just thought that was the greatest thing ever and get paid for it. And, you know, he was a wonderful person, a wonderful horseman. He was good at the training barn. He was a good jockey when he rode. And his specialty was the two-year-olds. So it was, you know, just strange. And a lot of things, like, I'm a right-handed person, but when he taught me about tying the knot and the reins, he was left-handed. So I remember one time years ago when I was going to work a horse because the jack was late, and I had my knot tied, and then he showed up. So they gave him a leg up, and he just worked the horse. And when he came back, he said, I didn't know you were left-handed. I go, I'm not. He goes, well, you tie your knot like a left-handed person. And I was thinking, well, that's probably because Sherman taught me how to tie my knot.
Wow, what a fantastic story. By the way, visiting with Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Do you still get on some of your horses today, Kathleen?
No, I just get on the pony and ride out with the horses and school the horses to be broke to the pony. We have a lot of two-year-olds in the afternoon. I quit galloping probably about 10 years ago. You know, I've had a lot of back issues and arthritis, and I just didn't feel like it was the thing to do.
I'm going to go back to that show when you first joined me here on the program 4 years ago, because I remember you telling me a story. This was even before you got involved on the racetrack, where you wanted to go to vet school, and you had an extremely impressive resume, if I recall, but you ended up being rejected. And I was thinking about something I read about your parents. They wanted you to go to college, but they supported your career choice however you wanted to do it. But what do you think your parents, Arlene and Joseph, would have said to see you win that race the other day?
It would have been very special. Very special.
Yeah, they had so much of an influence on you, obviously, and it would have been amazing if they could have been there with you. When you didn't get into college and you decided to be a horse trainer or get involved with the racetrack, what did they say about that decision?
Well, they weren't too happy about it. You know, my brother graduated from engineering school, and my sister graduated from nursing school. And, you know, to be honest with you, I thought it was just kind of a phase I would go through and, you know, then figure it out. And I did try, because, like I say, at the time, they only accepted two women a year for the vet school, which Michigan State had an awesome vet school. And I graduated National Honor Society, 110th out of a class of 750, and still didn't make it. So I tried going to community college, and they said, oh, just take some classes and reapply. And, you know, all of a sudden after a semester I'm there, I hate school, I hate the job I had, I hate everything. I thought I'm just going back to the racetrack until I figure out what I'm going to do. And, you know, there I was 40, 50 years later, and I'm still here.
Yeah, it kind of gets in your blood, right? It makes it very difficult to step away.
It does. It's a lot of sacrifice because of the hours, and it's a 7-day-a-week thing for, you know, most people, and it's hard to, like, step away even for a day and clear your mind because this one gets sick or this one didn't eat or something happened, somebody's leg blew up. So, I mean, it's kind of hard. And, you know, I often laugh. Somebody said, oh, you never got married and had kids? And I said, no, I never wanted to be tied down. And then I laughed. I thought, that's ridiculous. Because horses really tie you down and the business ties you down.
Do you ever get time to catch a breath and maybe take a short vacation or whatever the case might be?
Well, at the time, and that's the only thing I really regret, you know, we're all so tied up in the horses and in the business, and there is no good time really to get away. Of course, the years, thank God that I had the nicer horses, you're planning the bigger races, you don't want to be away from them or anything. And I mean, I had a really hard time even taking 3-4 days to fly to Michigan and back. And, you know, it really wasn't enough time. I would have liked to have spent more time with my parents. And, you know, when it comes time that they passed, my dad was 93. My mother passed away less than 90 days later at 90. And you think, where did all the time go?
Yeah. Yeah, that's one thing that you certainly can't get back, and it's tough when you're a horse trainer.
That's why, you know, my life has been tough and hard, and I've devoted a lot to the business, but my hat's off to the trainers that have families, that have kids, that have events to go to, that, you know, navigate the waters around all that. I mean, that's a tremendous effort.
Kathleen, what do you think, if you were to look back on your entire career in racing, what do you think you're probably most proud of?
I think, you know, you can't single out any race or anyone happening. I think the proudest accomplishment in my career has been that, you know, probably for the last 10 or 15 years, the stables have earned over $1 million, and we've been consistent in supporting the Florida program. And of course we do go up north to Monmouth and so on, but you know, you try and do the best you can for your owners. But I think the fact that it's been consistent and for such a long time, you know, you see people fly in and fly out of the business. There are some of the overnight sensations, and you know, it's very tough to do.
What else do you think you might be doing with your life if you didn't decide to become a horse trainer?
I don't know, because when you're a horse trainer, you don't have time to think about much else.
Are there other hobbies or interests or anything else that you enjoy doing in the few minutes that you are away from the racetrack?
I enjoy anything on the water. I have a home in Tampa on Lake Tarpon, which is a 2,500-acre lake, and I like kayaking and rowing and anything to do with the water, really.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute. When you're able to do that and you get time to be away, can that be somewhat therapeutic too, or is your mind always on the business?
No, it's therapeutic to get out on the water and paddle. That's where you really don't think of much else. And it's easy to, you know, take the kayak from the garage and throw it in the lake and just go. So that's what makes it nice. It's not like you have to drive someplace or do something. So it makes it very enjoyable.
Talking with trainer Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. If you are just joining us, this is a very special show. Kathleen O'Connell becoming the number one winningest female trainer in North American thoroughbred racing history on Sunday, March 12th, with a victory at Tampa Bay Downs. And that in itself, Kathleen, had to mean a lot. We didn't talk about that at the top of the show, but accomplishing that victory in Florida, where you spent so much time and you've you've laid down so many roots, that had to be special too.
Yes, it was very special for it to happen, especially at Tampa Bay Downs, because I've been at Tampa Bay where it wasn't even Tampa Bay. It was Sunshine Park. It was Florida Downs. I've been there every year since 1976. Of course, the first years I was there, I just galloped for mostly people from Michigan. But like I say, it was very special to happen there because it's been like home since, of course, they closed all the racetracks in Detroit. Detroit Racecourse was closed. Hazel Park is closed. So it was very, very special.
There will be people now that will say Kathleen O'Connell is the greatest female trainer in the history of the sport, certainly a number of wins right now. Do you look at yourself like that, Kathleen?
No, but I don't feel any different from last week to this week, or, you know, it's just the same. We work hard. We try and take care of the horse. We try and do what's best for the horse. Usually that's what's best for the owner at the end of the day, and we just keep working away.
How many horses do you have right now?
About between 50 and 60.
Wow. I remember you telling me 4 years ago in that first show that you started with, what, two horses?
Yep.
And to see where you are today, I know it's been a long journey. You talked about that, but my goodness, to see where you've been able to build this business. What was the most horses you ever had at one time?
I think I had up to 72 at one time because I had horses in Florida, and Colonial kind of ran full time, and I took almost 40 over there for the season that they ran from June until the 1st of August, and a lot of trainers from South Florida, Bill White, amongst a few, would send me like all the turf horses because they have such a great turf horse, and they were kind of on a one-way bus, but that was probably the most I ever had.
Is there an optimal number for your operation?
I really can't go much over 60. I go every other week, Miami to Tampa. I go every 10 days from Miami to New Jersey, because I'm kind of a hands-on person. So I just really don't, my brain can't go past that capacity. I guess I haven't found a place where I can buy more memory. But like I say, that just seems to be it. I can, you know, pretty much tell you the equipment for everybody and what everybody goes in, but I don't think I could handle much over that.
And you still like to be hands-on?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm sure that gives you, I won't say an advantage, but at least it allows you to know those horses on a different level than somebody who's relying on their assistant to kind of fill them in on the horse.
I've always liked to be close to the business, so to speak. So, you know, everybody's got their ways of doing it, and I guess it's just what everybody's comfort level is. And, you know, me doing that, I mean, the operation certainly wouldn't fall down if I didn't make it, I'm sure, but it's, you know, just a comfort level to me.
Well, we are halfway home on this edition of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Kathleen, please stay with me. We've got to get to a short commercial break. When we come back, we will look back on some of the horses that have had a hand in getting you to this point in your incredible career. That is next on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Don't get lost in the shuffle. Nominate your yearlings today to Fasig Tipton's Selected Yearling Sales, where the deck is stacked in your favor. Starting with the Fasig Tipton July sale in Lexington on July 11th, then the 102nd Saratoga sale in Saratoga on August 7th and 8th, and the New York Bred Yearling sale in Saratoga on August 13th and 14th. These summer sales annually deliver industry-leading results for sellers. Stand out at the Fasig Tipton Selected Yearling Sales. Nominate now at FasigTipton.com.
A Grade 1 winner of nearly $2 million, Silver State hails from the sire line of legendary Claiborne stallion Danzig. And his second dam is full sister to Kentucky Derby winner Monarcos. After winning the Oaklawn Handicap, Silver State defeated Nick's Go in the Grade 1 Metropolitan Handicap. Now his first foals have arrived. Grade 1 winner Silver State, standing at Claiborne Farm.
There's plenty of thrills at Gulfstream Park during the championship meet. with live racing Wednesday through Sunday. Don't miss the Triple Crown prep races, including the Fountain of Youth Stakes on March 4th and the Florida Derby Saturday, April 1st. Enjoy the races outdoors from the Carousel Club, our Feast in 10 Ponds, offering a premium view of the races. For stake schedules, reservations, tickets, and more, head to GulfstreamPark.com.
Attention horsemen, make plans now to race at Woodbine in 2023. The Thoroughbred meet begins in April and Woodbine will distribute more than $64 million in purses. Plus, you'll enjoy world-class racing and training facilities with top turf racing in North America over the prestigious E.P. Taylor Turf Course. Woodbine's convenient proximity to Kentucky and New York, along with a 9-month racing season, make it the perfect place to compete this year. Shipping incentives may be available, so don't delay. Contact Director of Racing Tim Lawson today and visit Woodbine.com. For more information.
Perennial leading consigner Eddie Woods is off to another fast start in 2023.
New Grange takes the San Pasqual, but Hopkins is too strong, finishing up powerfully to win the Palos Verdes, and it's Newgate to score by about a head. Reincarnate to take the sham. It's Rocket Tan to win the Holy Bull.
Additional 2023 stakes winners include Occult, Lane Way, and Sharar, who took the Jumeirah Derby in Dubai. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods consignment at OBS March. Visit eddiewoods.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But as they approach the quarter mile pole, well-defined is still the target. He's widening on the field by three. Here's Kentucky Wildcat under an all-out ride, running at the leader's second. Down along the inner rail, Next Go appears to be struggling third. They're into the stretch, and the upset might be on. It's well-defined, still in front. Kentucky Wildcat continues to surge at the leader on the outside. Well-defined, down to the wire. The local connections, Kathleen O'Connell, Pablo Morales, make every pole a winning one. Kentucky Wildcat second, So Alive, flies on to be third. A three-horse photo for fourth, and the running time on the board, 142.70, 7-1 on the winner.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna with you as always here on the program. That was Richard Grunder with the call of a very special win for trainer Kathleen O'Connell. It came back in 2019 in the Sam F. Davis at Tampa Bay Downs, and well-defined, a Florida bred, getting the victory that day, would go on to earn almost $800,000 in his career. Not the top earner that Kathleen O'Connell has ever had in her stable, but certainly one of the ones that she's going to always remember. And there have been so many horses that she's been privileged enough to be part of throughout her career, and that career has now taken her to 2,386 wins. She is the number one winningest female trainer in the history of the sport, thanks to that number, which came on Sunday at Tampa Bay Downs. And she is my special guest here today. I'll have more from Kathleen momentarily, right after I remind you that if you did miss any portion of the first half of this program or any of our Trainer Talk shows, simply head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast of this show and all of our shows whenever you have time at your leisure. And you can do that as well on every major podcast platform. Well, Kathleen, I'm sure well-defined is going to hold a special place in your heart, but there were so many others. But let's start with well-defined. And that day, that call we just heard from Richard Grunder in the Sam F. Davis, that had to be special.
It was very, very special. It was an incredible moment. And for it to happen at Tampa was good. He, you know, we always knew he was a nice horse. He was a little braver on the lead, and, you know, everything happened to work good. And he won the Sam F. Davis the same way that he won the last leg of the Stallion Stakes.
Yeah, he did. And he was on his day. I mean, first of all, you don't earn $800,000 in this game without having some heart and without being pretty good. He had all of that. And on his day, he was as good as anybody.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, well-defined. Not the top horse for Kathleen O'Connell. That, by the way, was a horse named Blazing Sword. And Kathleen, I'm not going to steal your thunder here. I'm going to let you tell the story, but earnings of more than $1.1 million upon his retirement. Tell me more about Blazing Sword and his story.
Blazing Sword was a very special horse, and he displayed it from the very beginning. He's the horse that was bred to go long and longer, and in his very first race, which was very short at Calder, he got left at the gate, even though he was a very, very good gate horse usually. But, you know, they're two-year-olds and a lot's going on in the afternoon that they're not used to. And it was like everybody broke and it was like, oh, I'm supposed to go. And then he left the gate. And in that race, he just got beat in the photo. And I thought, my God, for him to go spot the field that much. And it was a nice group of horses, maiden special weights, and only get beat in a photo. You know, we were really excited that we had something special. And he truly proved to be a very special horse.
What was his most memorable performance, at least in your eyes?
Well, two of the most memorable was the Calder Derby, because it was a six-horse field and everybody thought he'd gallop in it. And I just can't believe he got boxed in a six-horse field, but he did, but still managed to win. And one of the nicest victories was the Washington Arlington Handicap. And the people there were just wonderful and treated my owners wonderful. And it was a very special day and a very special honor. But he took us on an incredible journey. You know, it was long before 9/11, of course, and flying horses was easier. And, I mean, he participated in all the big dances, from the Remington Derby to the Hollywood Gold Cup to, you know, I mean, he danced them all, the Travers at Saratoga, which, you know, it was a horrible day, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and it rained, and this horse did not like the mud at all, and it was a miracle of God he even finished.
But. Yeah, you know, he was competing back in the late 90s, and he retired in 2000. Are you somewhat surprised that you haven't had another Blazing Sword come into your barn, or are those horses just that rare, Kathleen?
They're that rare, and they're very hard to come by. And, you know, I was fortunate enough, again, to work for Campbell's for years, who bred a lot of nice horses and, you know, took me on a heck of a ride. And, you know, every once in a while they just come into your barn. I had a horse named Shans Reddy that I remember came to my barn at Tampa Bay Downs in a cattle truck, an open cattle truck. It was almost embarrassing. Like having this truck pull up to your barn, two horses get off. But he turned out to be a very nice horse and won the Tropical Park handicap and some nice races. So you never know where they're going to come from, but you just don't. You know, Lady Shipman was, you know, a very average-looking horse. There was nothing, you know, like you could look at maybe Blazing Ford and Well Defined, and they had like what I call a wow factor, the way they walked, the way they carried themselves, the way they looked. They just had a little more presence about them. She was very ordinary looking and very ordinary to be around, but she could fly. And her mind was so good. I mean, you think of all the places she traveled and set three new track records in three different places. And, you know, she was just incredible, too.
If you could take one horse and bring them back to your barn today, one horse that you've had in the past, which horse would you choose?
Oh, I couldn't even do that.
I knew you were going to say that. Too many good ones, right?
Well, they just all have a special place, you know. They all have a special place, believe me.
Yeah. You mentioned the Campbells and Gilbert Campbell, who was the owner of Blazing Sword. Tell me a little bit more about your time with them and what they meant to you in your career.
Well, it was really wonderful to get affiliated with them and, you know, for them to have the trust that they did. You know, I was just starting out. I certainly didn't have any record that anybody could look up other than I had a very good record with the two-year-olds. And a gentleman, Daryl Solly, that was working on the farm had recommended me to some other people, and I had their two-year-olds going and did good. And Mr. Campbell was talking about sending some two-year-olds down to South Florida again because he had stopped for a while, and he recommended me, and you know, the rest was kind of history. We did well together. Everything seemed to go good, and you know, they were very stand-up people. I mean, I was nobody for them to allow me to keep a horse like Blazing Sword. You know, I mean, I was the nobody in the business. And yet they decided that if we were going to hit the road and go for the big races, that I was going to be the one to take them there.
Did that give you more confidence in what you were doing and your approach to the business when somebody like a Gilbert Campbell says, I believe in you?
Yes, of course it does. But, you know, you believe in the horse and you do what's right. Again, you know, what's right for the horse is always right for everybody at the end of the day. I mean, we'd all like to have Blazing Swords and would all like to do the big races. But, you know, it takes a certain horse to dance in them dances.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say you're cheering really hard for Songbird to make it into the Hall of Fame this year.
Oh, yes. Ivana Vinalot was another very special horse, very special.
Ivana Vinalot, the dam of Songbird, of course, who is nominated to the Hall of Fame for the first time this year. So we'll see if she gets in. I think it's a no-brainer that she gets in.
Well, that's me and you thinking that, but I don't know about everyone else.
Yeah, tell me more about Ivana Vinalot.
She was a very nice filly and very quick. She was very, very crooked. And she was just incredible, as fleet-footed as she was. And she didn't have, you know, a lot of confirmation going for her, but she managed to give it her all, and, you know, she stayed pretty sound, and she danced some big dances. And she had a big heart, a big heart.
You said she was crooked. Explain that to people that are listening. Much of our audience will know, but some won't. So what does that mean, Kathleen?
Well, the mechanics of a horse, I mean, they're going to run when they're crooked. They're going to run when they're straight. But it's like conformation, or it's like a car. If the car's all in line good, it's going to last longer. You know, some horses, God doesn't give them the best conformation in the world. So it puts strain on other parts of the body. And, you know, you have to work around it or live with it or plan your training regimen around it so that they last longer.
So you do have to adjust the way you train those horses.
Yes, I do. I think everybody has to.
Yeah, yeah, just to make sure that they're able to. And then to get one, and they, listen, there have been a lot of really unbelievable horses that have not had the greatest conformation in the world. I would say more than just a few. When you get a horse like that and you start looking at them and working with them, does it take you a little while to figure out what buttons to push with them?
Well, they tell you what buttons to push. You know, and it's just like with the babies. You know, the most important thing about the babies is no matter if they're a January foal or an April foal, sometimes it doesn't matter how old they are. Sometimes their physical attributes, they just can't be pushed that much. And sometimes they start getting a little filling here, a little swelling there, and they're just not ready to be two-year-old runners. And you see a lot of horses that don't start as two-year-olds. They just can't. Physically, they can't. If you try and push the envelope, it's not going to end up with good results.
If you were to sum up your training philosophy and your approach to training horses, Kathleen, I know every horse is an individual, and you've touched on that earlier, but how would you do it? How do you put that into words?
I don't know. Read your horse. Like people play poker. You have a certain number of cards and you have to play. You can only play the cards you got. You get horses in and you go by the horse. You can't go by the schedule. You can't go by breezing every week. You just can't do it.
I'll throw another name at you. And you already mentioned her, but I'll go ahead and throw it again. Lady Shipman.
Yes. She was awesome.
What's your favorite story you like to tell when you talk about her?
She was just a very, very kind horse to be around. She was a trainer's dream. She really was. She learned everything very quick, and she wanted to do it. You know, it's just like the track runners that run track or the pole vaulters that give that extra. You know, she wanted to do it. You just had to guide her and have her ready.
All right, I'll give you another name. Watch Me Go.
Watch Me Go was very, very special. And, you know, even though his participation in the Derby wasn't that great, the fact that he made it there, I thought, was a big attribute. The fact that he won the Tampa Derby was a very, very special moment for me. And although anybody that knows me knows I complain about getting the one hole, I didn't want the 20 hole in the Derby.
You'd rather have the one.
I think in that instance I would have. But, you know, one of the best stories I remember is, you know, I'm not a fond person of the one hole because I think it dictates the whole race. You're forced to go. You know, you don't always want to be in the front, and it kind of forces your hand, and especially with the younger horses, because you can't, like, decide you're going to take back out of the one hole and have them eat a ton of dirt and everything else like that. But I remember going to the Derby draw with Mr. and Mrs. Campbell, and they had two seats for every horse, you know. And I told Mr. Campbell, I said, sit with Mrs. Campbell for the draw. No, I'm sitting with my trainer. Me and you are sitting together. So I go, okay. So me, who's always, you know, 5 minutes late for everything, he sent the limo to pick me up. He was going to make sure I wasn't late for anything. So they picked me up, and we went to the draw, and everybody got seated, and I sat next to Mr. Campbell. And when they came time, and they were drawing everything, and Mr. Campbell leaned over, and I go, Mr. Campbell, I just don't want to get the one hole. I just don't want to get the one hole. So then they go, and it's Watch Me Go. And then when they said post 20, I almost fell over. And Mr. Campbell squeezing my knee, I thought about as hard as he could. I thought it was going to break. And he goes, smile, the cameras are coming. Smile.
Be happy with the 20 hole. Be happy with it. I mean, you know, that's one of the things about being a horse trainer that I feel from the outside looking in has to be excruciating. When you come to a big race, you do everything right to get the horse set for the big race, get them ready to peak on that day, and you're at the mercy of the post position draw, and then you're at the mercy of the person that you give a leg up to before the race. It's out of your hands.
Right. And then, you know, you're also at the mercy of how the race unfolds. I mean, when you've got a 20-horse field, it's not always going to be, I don't think, the best horse that wins. It's going to be the horse that survives the trip.
Yeah. Other than the post draw, which was a fantastic story, by the way, Kathleen, what, when you're making the walkover, when you're going through the process of saddling Watch Me Go, what was that experience like for you?
That was totally indescribable, really. And, you know, I had been to the Breeders' Cup, and we had been out to Del Mar and Hollywood with Blazing Sword. I had been to Saratoga, which was one of my favorite places also. But the walkover for the Derby is, you know, and especially to walk over with a horse that you're going to run, is just an incredible feeling.
Visiting with trainer Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton, fresh off of her victory on Sunday, which made her the number one winningest female trainer in the history of thoroughbred racing here in North America. I usually save this question, well, later in the show, at least toward the end of the program, Kathleen, but would the Derby be the number one thing on your bucket list that you still want to accomplish, or is there something maybe even greater than the Derby for you?
No, I mean, the Derby is everybody's, I think, special moment. Even though it's not the biggest purse or anything, it's, you know, it's just a special classic race. And the Breeders' Cups were pretty special, too.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cups are certainly fantastic. And, you know, just being part of them, it's the Super Bowl of horse racing, right?
Exactly. And it's just like, you know, my brother, who knows nothing about horse racing, you know, just to make it to the Derby, he says, you made it that far, you know.
Your brother is not involved in any way. Does he follow your career?
No, I mean, he's followed it more probably the last bit, you know, and he was, called to congratulate me because, you know, it was somebody had sent him the article. But like I say, he's a mechanical engineer and, you know, far removed from the horse world.
Well, it's cool that he's still able to, you know, to follow along and that he supports you in that way. And it's just it's a wonderful thing. If I were to walk into your house, and I love this question, I ask it almost every show. If I were to walk into your house, Kathleen, what types of racing memorabilia am I going to see?
Oh, I have a whole room that's just racing memorabilia. And it's a lot of pictures, a lot of trophies, and a lot of special moments from the Stallion Stakes to the Derby Cup for the participants to there's just a lot of things in there. And there's a picture from the Jackies, I think, in 2002 at Gulfstream, and it's just one of my favorite pictures because they're all in tuxedos, including Eddie Nunes, who rode for me for years, and Rosemary Holmeister, and every Jackie in that picture rode for me, from Pat Day to Eddie Nunes to their, you know, it was just an incredible picture.
Wow. Is that room a room that you'll visit often, or is it one of those things where every once in a while when you accomplish something and you put a new item in there and then you don't go look at it for a while?
No, actually it's my home office room, so to speak. So I'm in there a lot, and my father built a huge teak cabinet for the house I had in Davie, Florida in 97. And when I sold the house, the people didn't want it and they were going to axe it out. So I actually removed it piece at a time and rebuilt it in the home I'm at now in my office.
Wow, that's fantastic. You know, so many trainers or jockeys or athletes in general, when you ask them about looking back on their career, they'll say, well, I really don't look back. I'm always looking ahead. And I think sometimes that's kind of BS, because I think everybody has to spend some time in reflection and looking back on their accomplishments, especially if they've been significant the way that yours have been. So do you spend much time looking back?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of good memories, and a lot of the awards or pictures or whatever that are in my office bring back a lot of warm memories, not only just the horses and the awards, but the people that were on the trip along the way, whether it was the groom or the exercise rider or, you know, funny things that happened along the way, you know, so it's a lot of memories, a lot of memories.
Yeah, and there's so many of those, aren't there? There's so many of those stories that go untold, but it's because of the fact that, you know, they happen, I won't say privately, but they happen kind of behind the scenes.
Exactly. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stories, you know, and, you know, it makes it part of everything, you know. It's, like I say, it's part of a huge thing, and it's a group effort. Like I say, it's a lot of people putting in a lot of effort.
You know, when you were getting close to the record this past week, I received a couple of messages. I believe one was an email and one was on social media, and they were asking if, when you set the record, if I would have you on the program. So you certainly have plenty of fans out there, Kathleen. Talk about that. Do you ever, when you're walking around the racetrack, do people come up to you and ask you for autographs or want a picture with you and all those types of things?
Oh, yeah, some people do, and, you know, I think it's great that they're even out at the races and that they spend time and everything. And, you know, my health, of course, has been on edge as far as they want it to happen. So it's probably a good thing it happened, or they'd probably all have to go to detox because they drank when we lost, they drank when we won, they drank when we got disqualified.
Can I come work for you?
Yeah.
I like the way you do things. That's great. I'm glad it finally happened. And, you know, talk a little bit about that, your team, because you don't do this alone.
No, we don't do it alone. And, I mean, every person is important in my team, every person, from the hot walkers to the grooms to the riders, the exercise riders in the morning, you know, it's all a team effort. Everybody trying to do what's best for the horse.
Yeah, it all starts with the horse, and you mentioned that earlier. If you're doing things right by the horse, then everything else kind of falls into place. And it is a team. It's a family with trainer Kathleen O'Connell, and that's why she is so successful, and it has been a wonderful ride. So what's the next chapter hold? Where do we go from here, Kathleen?
We're not sure. We're taking one day at a time, and we're trying to enjoy the day as it was Sunday, because it was a wonderful day. It really was.
Yeah, it was special, and there are so many great memories there. Do you have much memorabilia from that day? Do you at least have the wind picture?
We have a lot of pictures from a lot of people that took a lot of pictures, and then we brought the sign back to the barn, and we took the picture with my help, and I trying to get the gentleman from Tampa Bay to take it so that the exercise riders and everybody can get in it this week. So we're enjoying the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it's really special, and I can't thank you enough for spending time with me here on the program today. And it's hard to believe that, you know, the way life works, right? If you had gotten into vet school all those years ago when you wanted to be a veterinarian and you applied and you didn't get in, where your life might be now, we wouldn't be talking here on this show more than likely.
Right, right. So, see, God moves in mysterious ways, and I've always thought one door shuts, another one opens. We just don't realize it sometimes.
Yeah, well, Kathleen, listen, it has been a delight to look back on that moment with you and to hear your story and to hear you tell other stories, too. It's been wonderful, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time. All the best moving forward, and congratulations again on that incredible accomplishment.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, that is trainer Kathleen O'Connell here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, and what a ride. What a ride. And she, you know, she said that in her post-race quote after she became the first, the number one winningest female trainer in North American thoroughbred racing history. She said that. She said, it's not only about the destination, it's the journey getting there. And she talked about that in the first half of the program. If you missed it, head back and check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. And you can do it on every major podcast platform. She talked about what that meant, what that journey has been like for her. And it's incredible. She talked about the people that she had the chance to be around, that she learned from, and so many people who have had a hand in making this possible. And as she started to talk about it, she said, well, I don't want to leave anybody out. There were so many people. But everybody in the sport of thoroughbred racing that reaches these levels doesn't get there alone. And it's so great when they come on this show and they start talking about it. And you heard her get emotional when she talked about her late parents, Arlene and Joseph, and what it would have meant to have them there with her on Sunday. But she had enough people there. She had support from all of her friends and all of her family. And she is now the top dog, if you will, the number one winningest female trainer in thoroughbred racing history here in North America. Congratulations to Kathleen O'Connell. My thanks to her for taking the time and telling you that story here today. If you missed any portion of the show, I'll remind you again, horseracingradio.net is where the podcast is. You can do it on Apple Podcasts, on Podbean, on Spotify, Google, however you get your podcasts, go back and listen. Follow us on social media, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and subscribe to our weekly email newsletters on our website at horseracingradio.net. For my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, I'm Mike Pena. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.